One day, on the drive home from church, little Timmy, sitting in the back seat of the family car, said to his mom, who was driving, "Mom, who will clean around God's throne?" His mom, busy keeping her eye on the road and on the traffic, didn't quite get it. And she asked him, "What did you say, Timmy?" And he repeated the question, "Who will clean around God's throne?" And his mom, being very puzzled, couldn't understand the question. She said, "Clean around God's throne? What are you talking about? What do you mean?" She said, "Yes, because at church today, we sang that final hymn, and it said, 'And dust surround the throne.'" Come on, people. We're marching to Zion. Come, we that love the Lord, and let our joys be known, and dust surround the throne. You know, they say if you have to explain a joke, it's not funny. But it wasn't meant to be a joke. In his little mind, misunderstanding the words of the hymn, he thought there was dust around God's throne and someone needed to clean around God's throne. How often do we think of service to God? The time is late, the hours left few. Jesus knows that he is spending the last hours of his earthly ministry, and he desired to spend the time celebrating his last Passover with his dear friends, his disciples. He had done all he could in instructing them, in teaching them, in motivating, in equipping them, in inspiring them on the finer points of the kingdom and how to share the gospel. These 12 who were to be the instruments used by the Holy Spirit to turn the world upside down, they were still not ready to graduate from the Jesus School of Evangelism. And there was one more lesson left in the curriculum. The subject, humility. The methodology, not by means of lecturing or promulgation, but by modeling, by what Jesus does. Jesus modeled humility. And humility, I think, is not something that you can preach about, you can lecture about. You just have to do it. The setting of this last lesson was the Passover feast. All had been prepared. The room had been reserved. The table, or rather the triclinium, three-legged table with its reclining comfort of cushions or couches, had been set up. The menu had been prepared: unleavened bread, the paschal lamb, and the bitter herbs. But who will wash Jesus' feet? The disciples file in to the room. And Luke tells us that there was also a dispute among them. Don't miss what is going on. Jesus is about to enter a very traumatic, the most traumatic experience of his life. And he needs that support, that moral support from his disciples. Celebrating this feast. And what would have happened in the next 24 hours was a culmination type meeting anti-type. And what were his support group? What were they doing? There was a dispute among them. What was the dispute about? As to which of them, Luke tells us, should be considered the greatest. And Jesus says to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors, but not so among you. On the contrary, he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. For who is greater, he who sits at the table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? For yet I am among you as one who serves. Jesus says one of them would betray him, adding fire to the dispute that existed amongst them as to which would be greatest. And Luke tells us, then they began to question amongst themselves which one of them would do this thing. Not to examine their own selves, to examine their own heart condition, but to cast judgment upon the offender. Typically, when there was a feast, 9 to 20 guests would be invited, and they are arranged in a prescribed seating order to emphasize their status, their connection, their closeness to the dominus, the head of the feast, which would be Jesus in this case. So naturally, as they are entering the room, they're looking at the pecking order, the seating arrangement indicated what Jesus thought of them. The one closest to Jesus would be the one whom he thought was greatest among them. And as they went around the circle, the one on the opposite side would be the one furthest. So everyone's eyes naturally looked at that person because this is where Jesus appointed him. Judas, we are told, pressed next to Christ on the left side. John was on the right. And if there was a highest place, Judas was determined to have it, and that place was thought to be next to Jesus himself. And the sad irony of the situation cannot be avoided while Jesus is facing the reality of being betrayed and being killed. His disciples are arguing amongst themselves about who is going to be greatest. These lads needed to be taught a lesson. And so as they recline at the table, each disciple feels a little bit uncomfortable. Someone ought to at least wash Jesus' feet. But if I do that, where will that put me in the social pecking order? I would be at the bottom of the heap. If I volunteer, I will get stuck with the job from now on. Maybe if I just wait, someone else will do it. You see, in those days, the job of the one who would wash the feet of the guests while they reclined would be the job of a slave. Not just any ordinary slave. This job was so low, a Jewish slave would not qualify. It was a foreign slave who would be assigned to this most menial of tasks. And so if they washed Jesus' feet, it would mean that they are the low, the lowliest of the low. And so no one wanted to do the job. The song says, everybody said that anybody could do the important things somebody should do. Everybody knows what anybody could do, all the good things that nobody did. Well, the preacher, it says, came to me and said what I ought to do if I wanted to make my religion true. He'd do it himself, but he really didn't have the time. And he said that the duty was mine. Well, the deacon came by and said, give me a hand if you want to be going to the promised land. Here is something that I don't have time to do, so I better give it to you. Well, I'm too busy. So I tell everybody, the work's got to be done by somebody. It could be done by anybody, but nobody, nobody, nobody did. Reading John's account, apparently somewhere in the room there was a basin accompanied by a pitcher of water and a towel. These were normal for a feast. These were the articles of humility, the articles that would be used by the servant to wash the feet of the guests. And no one took on the job that was waiting to be done. This is a teaching moment for Jesus, and he jumps into action. He lays aside his outer coat, which symbolizes his position as a rabbi. He takes it off and he lays it aside. He ties his waist with the towel and he stoops down and he washes the feet of the disciples. Now, you don't understand that they did not drive around in Fords or in Holdens or in Toyotas or in Mazdas. They did not wear enclosed shoes and socks. Think about that when you're washing someone's feet later on. The mode of transportation was walking by the common man, and if you were a soldier or someone of status, maybe you rode a horse or a chariot or even a donkey, and you know what comes out of the exhaust pipe of these animals, what is spread over the roadways and the footpaths that can sometimes get between the toes of those who are lower on the spectrum and who walk. Even the dust that would get under the toenails. That's why no one wanted to do this job and why it was reserved for the lowliest of the low. But here Jesus steps into action and he does the job that no one wants to do. He washes the feet of all of his disciples, even Judas Iscariot, the one whom he knew had already betrayed him. He washed his feet and thus offered him atonement. And you know the story. But have you ever noticed, and have you ever asked yourself the question, who washed Jesus' feet? All the disciples were involved in their own self-interest, their own thoughts, and they did not notice or care, neither did they do anything. While their feet were being taken care of, while their needs were being taken care of, while they were being made comfortable, while they were being refreshed by their Lord and Master who became their servant, his needs were not taken care of. And no one noticed. No one cared. No one did anything about it. Even when Jesus gave them the hint, they didn't get it. And John tells us, Jesus says, "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you." Hint. Still no one noticed that Jesus, their Lord and Master, their friend, still had his feet dirty. No one's heart was broken for Jesus. Another songwriter says, "Let your heart be broken for a world in need. Feed the mouths that hunger. Soothe the wounds that bleed. Give the cup of water and a loaf of bread. Be the hands of Jesus serving in his stead. Here on earth, applying principles of love, visible expression, God still rules above, living illustration of the living word to the minds of all who've never seen or heard. Blessed to be a blessing, privileged to care, challenged by the need apparent everywhere, where mankind is wanting, fill the vacant place. Be the means through which the Lord reveals his grace. Add to your believing deeds that prove it true. Knowing Christ as Savior, make him master too. Follow in his footsteps. Go where he has trod. In the world's great trouble, risk yourself for God. Let your heart be tender and your vision clear. See mankind as God sees. Serve him far and near. Let your heart be broken by a brother's pain. Share your rich resources. Give and give again." Who will wash Jesus' feet today? What are you saying? "Of course I will wash his feet." Will you? Will I? On Judgment Day, Jesus will say to some, "Thank you for washing my feet." And they will say, "Lord, when did we wash your feet?" And Jesus will answer, "I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me." And to others on Judgment Day, Jesus will say, "Why didn't you wash my feet?" And they will say, "When did we not wash your feet, Lord?" His answer will be, "For I was anhungered, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and you visited me not. Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of these, the least, you did it not to me." Are you washing Jesus' feet? Retroactively, Jesus did get his feet washed. Luke tells us in Luke chapter 7, verse 36 to 39, "Then one of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him. And he went to the Pharisee's house and sat down to eat. And behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner." Let me repeat this. "Behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner. When she knew that Jesus sat at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought in an alabaster flask of fragrant oil and stood at his feet behind him weeping. And she began to wash his feet. She began to wash his feet. She began to wash his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with the fragrant oil. Who? Who? Pastor, you sure you read that right? Who washed Jesus' feet? Yes, look. Look at who it was. When all the big church leaders, the disciples, future church leaders, Peter himself, John, the revelator, none of them did it. Too caught up in themselves. A sinner woman. She was the one who washed Jesus' feet. And Luke tells us she kissed his feet. Can you imagine? Jesus, the rabbi, the teacher, the leader in the church, an unmarried man, allowing a woman, a sinner woman, her sin was not lying, her sin was not pride, her sin was not stealing. She was a prostitute. She had that reputation among some. And Jesus permitted her to kiss his feet. There's a reason why in our churches we don't have men and women washing each other's feet. We separate to avoid any kind of embarrassment or any appearance of evil. But Jesus permitted her to kiss his feet. And in the Greek, the compound word kataphileo, which in my West Indian mind, it's the literal translation, to love down. And that does a lot in my West Indian mind. She loved down on Jesus' feet. Repeatedly. Softly, tenderly, unrelenting, she kept on kissing and kissing and kissing his feet. And to those observing, some were uncomfortable. It appeared obscene. And that's why Luke continues to write, he says, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he spoke to himself saying, this man, if he were a prophet, would know who and what manner of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner. He wouldn't have even allowed this woman to touch him, far less to kiss him. So what is the final lesson? When we see someone washing Jesus' feet, don't get in the way. Especially when we haven't done it ourselves. What was Jesus' response to the thoughts of the Pharisee? Do you see this woman? Jesus said, I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet. But she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair, the hair of her head. You gave me no kiss. But this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. Some of you might have thought, okay, one or two, that's enough, but keep doing this. This is not right. Jesus says, "You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Therefore," I'm not saying it, Jesus says, "therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, who washed Jesus' feet? The one whose sins were many. Therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, to whom little is forgiven. All those who did not wash Jesus' feet, all those who complained at what this woman, this sinner woman, was doing, Jesus was speaking to them, to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. Who will wash Jesus' feet?